And that's the kicky music that means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And I'm here around the table with the Pop Culture Happy Hour crew. How's everybody?
Hey,
doing great.
Good.
All right. Glenn Weldon, what do you do for NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And Trey Graham, what do you do for NPR?
I'm the movies editor at NPR.org.
And Stephen Thompson, when you're not having gum surgery, what do you do for NPR?
I am an editor and writer for NPR Music.
And, you know, he flaps his gums on this podcast.
I do flap. They
maybe that's the problem.
Hopefully not audibly.
Oh, we're just hoping that you're flapping healthy gums.
Yep. That'll always be the dream.
So you can store nuts for the winter.
Anyway, as you hear this podcast, it is getting to be summer. It occurred to us.
We checked a calendar.
Yeah.
We're all sort of variations.
We noticed that it was warm under our turtlenecks and sweaters.
Well, we're diurnal. We go out at the beginning of the day and then the end of the day. And that's the only time. Incidentally, I learned that word from one of my friend's fathers. So Sarah's dad, rock on. So we did notice that it's getting to be summer. It will soon be Memorial Day, and after that we will finally be able to wear our white shoes, and it will officially be summer. But we did want to take a few moments out of our day to think about some summer-themed pop culture ideas. And I'm going to kick off by asking about your summer reading list, because I think we all know, well, Stephen, you don't have to, it's okay if it's the TV Guide. We all know from our childhoods that one of our obligations is to read books in the summer, mm-hmm. unless we are, you know, illiterate or Stephen.
or both.
So I wanted to start off by asking you guys, what might be on your summer reading list? Glenn Weldon.
I got a few, actually. I'm going to be reviewing several books for NPR over the summer, and the first batch is in a big summer books package that's coming up pretty soon. I didn't choose Beach Reads because I don't believe in the beach read.
Yeah.
I don't believe in the beach. I hate it. It is not for me.
We're back to your fear of the sun.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. For when I'm on vacation, I'll either be in the water or back at the beach house in the dark, cool house reading or watching TV.
That's sure.
Whenever I go out and see people basking in the sun like pre-melanomic elephant seals, I just want to go up to them and hand them pamphlets and say, check out, that is an irregular mole.
About if you're going to be reading, you might as well read inside.
Exactly. That's the way I feel. So some of the books that I'm looking forward to cracking open, actually, when I go on vacation over Memorial Day week, are Albert Brooks's 2030. It's a novel where he prognosticates about the future in much the same way that George Orwell did, only I'm hoping funnier.
Yeah.
Then there's also a book by Hannu Rajaniemi. This is getting a lot of buzz in the quote-unquote hard science fiction circles. Historically,
Is there such a thing as hard science
fiction? Well,
sounds kind of sexy.
The book is called The Quantum Thief, and it's a debut novel of science fiction. And, historically, to risk some people getting angry at me, hard science fiction to me means great ideas, big ideas, workmanlike prose.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. Embassy Town is a book by China Mieville, I suppose is how you say that. He's a urban fantasist. Mm-hmm. He specializes in urban fantasy, which is, sounds like something like a cable channel next to BET.
I was going to say, again, with the titillating category
urban
names.
Urban fantasy.
And his last book was a great book called Kraken, which owed a lot to Neil Gaiman's oeuvre, but I'm hoping he steps out of it.
I'm familiar with that these days.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, of course you are.
The Neil Gaiman oeuvre.
There's a book called Robopocalypse by Daniel H. Wilson. You can guess what that's about.
Is it a love story?
It's a love between man and his iron. I don't know. This is by the guy who wrote a book called How to Survive the Robot Uprising. So write what you know. You know.
Right.
He's doing a novel now. Good for you.
Right.
Those are books I'm looking forward to reading. But the book that I have read and I love and I want to tell everybody about is a book that just came out called The Great Night by Chris Adrian. Is Chris Adrian a pal of mine? Yes, he is. Mm-hmm. Is this book, nevertheless, beautiful and haunting and exquisite and hugely ambitious, richly imaginative, but also he takes the time to really craft sentences that are lovely, so lovely that you want to kind of go home and be alone with them. They're amazing.
Goodness.
defile them in all manner of ways.
It's basically about three people who go into a park in San Francisco on a midsummer's night and get caught up in the realm of Oberon, Titania, and the rest of the fairy, capital F, weird spelling, A-E-R-I-E. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And it's based, it's an update of the Midsummer Night's Dream.
I have cracked it, and so far it is, as you say, beautifully crafted. It made my list, too.
Yeah.
Well, Trey Graham, you've read that one. What else is on your summer reading list?
Well, I haven't quite finished it, so that is absolutely on my list for this summer, along with... I will simply note, because I owned the toy motorcycle and the ramp and the crank back when I was a wee lad, the new biography of Evel Knievel.
Wow.
Really?
Totally on my list. Game of Thrones, which I am currently 8,000 pages through the 11,000 pages that it occupies on my iPad right now, of the 4-book set.
Wow.
I didn't know
books were that long.
Well, you know, it's on the iPad, and I've bumped up the type a little bit for easy reading in the dark. But, yeah, so that's going to occupy a decent chunk of my summer, because the next book, which I think is the fifth in the series, is due out in July. And there's a rumor that we might be getting an early copy here at NPR. Bob Mould's autobiography is out in June, the guy from Husker Du and Sugar, who sort of had a little career as a writer for professional wrestling. And then came back and relaunched his music career. And then there are two theater-adjacent things that I'm interested in. There's a Wendy Wasserstein bio is out in September, which I guess is pushing the definition of summer reading a little bit, but she's a really fascinating figure. And Jason Zinnemann, who writes about theater for the New York Times, has a book due in July about the rise of modern Hollywood horror since the 1970s, looking at people like Polanski and De Palma and Wes Craven, the guys who, at least for the purposes of his argument, defined what makes a serious modern scare that taps into real fears, as opposed to the sort of vampires and werewolves kind of fright that was the norm up until then. I've talked a little bit about the Peter Wimsey mysteries, I think, before. Those are sort of standard summer reads that I will go back to occasionally. If you're not game for a whole weekend with Bunter and Harriet and Lord Peter, you might want to try the short stories. I believe there's a collection called Lord Peter Views the Body, which will give you kind of an introduction to the universe of this detective fiction. Dorothy Sayers is the author. Oh, and also just this afternoon on the shelf where we keep the bound galleys, I found a copy of Lev Grossman's sequel to The Magicians. It's called The Magician King. I don't think that's out till somewhat later this summer, but I'll be reading it shortly.
Very good. Very, very good. Stephen Thompson, what's on your summer reading list?
I do need to come up with something to do between the end of The Celebrity Apprentice and the beginning of Big Brother.
Yes.
What I'm offering in lieu of any concept of what sort of books might possibly be coming out is...
We're all just shaking our heads.
I am issuing another promise.
Oh.
That I'm a read a book.
It's a challenge.
Mike Katziff is slow clapping. Clap.
So what you're saying is that in lieu of doing some homework and compiling a list, you are shoving it off on the... on the audience.
Seriously, if I had gone to a book release schedule and looked at a list of titles and authors and been like, oh, I'm going to talk about... Researching would be worse than what I'm doing. So I am going to read a book this summer. It's going to be a little project. I beseech all of you listening, rather than using that old Gmail address that we had set up for the last time that I read a book on the recommendations of our excellent listeners.
And enjoyed it. Not that it has motivated you to read another one.
I'm 20 pages into Catching Fire. I read The Hunger Games, for those of you who have not listened to our old shows. Loved it. Eventually, we'll get around to reading books 2 and 3. But I figured I should branch out beyond that.
You're missing the parts of Catching Fire that are about football and people running through obstacle courses and falling in the mud.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's a lot.
We had him.
There was a moment when I said football when he was kind of like, is that true? Wait a minute. That might be true. They could have football. They have fighting. They could have football.
I do like fighting.
Does this turn into a story about football? Yeah. It totally does.
It becomes Brian's song at the end. Takes a weird turn.
Anyway, so you're issuing another plea.
I'm issuing a plea. Go to facebook.com/PCHH. Recommend a book for me to read, and I will read it. Damn it, I will do it. And
you'll read something.
I will talk about it on this very podcast.
I think what we should do, we'll go to the Facebook page and we'll set up in our discussion sections. If instead of our wall, you look under discussions, we'll set Stephen up a special thread where you can recommend your books for him to read so that he doesn't have to work too hard finding the recommendations. We'll just put them all in one place. What do you think about that, buddy?
That sounds great. And then, you know, I can go to my bookstore to buy something other than Lego minifigures.
Anyway.
So, Linda, what is on your reading list?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Stephen. As it happens, this summer...
Best segue ever!
I am glad. As it happens, like Glenn, I'm doing a books project for NPR this summer, which you will get to see at some point, which involves reading some books about sports, some current books...
Hey.
Glenn Weldon is snoring because he has a small, closed mind.
I'm mug sleeping you, Linda.
Among other things, I'm going to be reading, coming out later this month, is the massive oral history of ESPN, which is being written by Tom Shales and James Andrew Miller, who also wrote the very highly regarded oral history of Saturday Night Live. And there was an excerpt from the ESPN book published on GQ within the last couple of days, and it is a barn burner. If you like stories about Keith Olbermann getting really, really mad and people getting really, really mad at him, you're going to love this excerpt. So I am super excited about reading that book. I'm going to be reading a combination of some nonfiction and fiction and biography. So it's going to be a big summer for sports books, particularly over the next month or so. And I'm pretty confident that I'm going to be reading some more Sandman because we've been reading that for the book club on the blog, as you know, if you are a reader of Monkey See. After reading that volume, I have gone back to the beginning and I bought the first one on Free Comic Book Day.
Shazam.
So I'm going to be reading some Sandman. I am also, as always, going to be reading some books with shoes on the cover. That's right.
Yes.
That's right, people. Yes. It's summer. I have a little tradition that I like to call Stay in Bed Saturday. And the best thing to do on Stay in Bed Saturday, which incidentally is a privilege of people like me who are both self-sufficient and lazy. The best thing to do on Stay in Bed
tradition
Saturday
is 1/7 of your entire life.
I don't do it every
week. Every week.
You big goof. I have a little thing I do from time to time called Stay in Bed Saturday. And on Stay in Bed Saturday, the best thing to do is to read something that does not tax your brain too much. So it may not actually be shoes on the cover, but I will be reading some. I will be reading some shoe fiction or the equivalent. And on that note, I should say, not coming out until October, but I am hoping that I will have an advanced copy, hint, and can squeeze it into the latter part of the summer. Sarah Wendell, who is the lovely woman behind Smart Bitches Trashy Books, has a book coming out in October called Everything I Know I Learned from Romance Novels, which I am super excited about. Cannot wait to read it. Will hope that the tail end of my summer will be reading an advanced copy of that book. Shameless begging is what you are hearing right now. So that's my summer reading list.
Yeah, well, let me pick up on one thing. You know, I don't believe in the beach read, but that doesn't mean you folks out there don't. And I don't judge you for it. I kind of judge you for it. You know what's good to read at the beach, if you're so inclined, is a comic book. So The Sandman is a really good option. It's a little dark, but
it is a little dark.
Makes sense to me. There's a really fun cartoonist named Vanessa Davis. She just came out with a book called Make Me a Woman. She's in the tradition of Roz Chast and Linda Barry. She's so funny. She's so smart. It's a fantastic book. It'd be great to read on the beach.
Excellent. I believe in the beach read. Definitely, I used to go on vacation with my family to a cabin in Maine that had no television and also, we learned later in our lives, had no cell phone service. Mm-hmm. And as a kid, I mean, we would spend 2 or 3 weeks sometimes in the summer out there.
Interacting
with each other.
Wow.
And I actually did a lot of reading. This is where it becomes the double-edged sword of letting your children find their own culture. This is probably around when I was 13, 14, and that's when I started reading Harlequin romances, because you could get them in paper bags at the used bookstore.
Oh, like in big-size grocery bags.
In a grocery bag. Used, and you could get a whole grocery bag of used Harlequins for like $2. Nice. And that's how it all started.
And that's how you passed the time between Yahtzee games.
Yahtzee, we played games, you know, went fishing. Mm. I used to do things before Stay in Bed Saturday. It's not every Saturday, okay? Anyway.
If I can jump in and add one that...
Absolutely.
Another that's a real classic summer read for me. I wouldn't want to put it in exactly the same category as Shoe Fiction or Harlequin Romances, but it's good, funny, fun, fleet reading. It's a trilogy of books by a guy named Joe Keenan, who was one of the writers for Frasier and a couple of other shows. Blue Heaven, Putting on the Ritz, and Lucky Star, I think, is the third one. And they are sort of the urban, snappy, Woodhousian equivalent of uppity Shoe Fiction. It's smart, and it's funny, and it's, like I said, quick.
Fabulous. Sounds great. So now you know what we will all be reading this summer. And that brings us to a very important question, which is, how do you know that it's summer? And we're just going to take a quick moment to consider the question, what is the beginning? What is the beginning of summer for you? With a pop culture slant, but with the right to invoke other things as you see fit. Glenn Weldon, when is it summer?
All right, if you had talked to me when I was a 8-year-old boy, I would have said the ice cream sandwich, the first ice cream sandwich of the
season.
But I'm an older man now, and this isn't really a pop culture thing that keys off the summer. It's more a cultural thing, literally cultural, because as I've talked to you guys about before, we wasps have given the world two things: passive aggression, you're welcome, and cocktail hour. So let's pretend it's Memorial Day weekend. You know, I don't like the beach, but I love the ocean. So if I spend the entire day in the ocean this Memorial Day, and I'll come back to the beach house, and I'll get into the outdoor shower. The outdoor shower is key, very key element. There can be copperheads and cottonmouths and bats and spiders and a dude with a machete and a hockey mask in there. It doesn't matter. The outdoor shower is key. You take a shower, you go upstairs, you change, you come back down, and you pour yourself that first gin and tonic of the season. The sound of the ice clinking in that glass, and that first taste. When I take that first sip at 5 o'clock, I hear the voices.
In the morning?
That's later on.
Yeah.
But the voices of my ancestors call to me when I first taste it, and what they're saying to me is, go colonize something. Subjugate a people, it says. That subcontinent just sitting there. They're not using it. Go forth. You'll be fine. You're not going to get malaria. You're drinking the tonic.
You're
fine.
Worst.
Pick up your blunderbuss and go.
See, I thought he was going for shower and gin and tonic at the same thing. The cocktail hour equivalent of the shower coffee.
The shower coffee or
the shower beer.
Or the shower scotch. Yeah. As 30 rocks in. But that's it. It's that first, that sound of the tinkling glass. The tinkling ice, yes.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Let's have one now.
Yeah, right.
It's a little early. Trey Graham.
You know, I was thinking maybe it's that first pop culture song when suddenly everybody agrees what the big summer hit is going to be. Everybody's suddenly singing the same thing, even if they ought to know better.
Right.
I'm not sure if that's about radio saturation or some sort of underground clubby thing. Maybe it's like, you know, with Party
performed
in the USA.
Glee.
Yeah, when it's performed on Glee. If it's like Party in the USA, you know it's summer when the Fire Island gays make a flip video of your song. But I think that moment is where, you know, that moment when a song asserts itself and becomes the meme of the summer, that to me is when summer starts.
Absolutely. Excellent. That is a great beginning of summer, in my opinion. Stephen Thompson, when is it summer?
When is it summer? Well, hearing Glenn talking in particular reminds me of a discussion we had a few months ago where Patton Oswalt was talking about everything that ever was available forever. And the difference between the sort of nostalgia that we experienced as kids thinking about when does summer start, which really the answer is when school's out.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the difference between now being a 38-year-old with a certain amount of disposable income, ice cream sandwiches are a year-round exercise.
No.
Drinks that clink in a glass.
No.
I mean, I'm a beer man, but that cold, frosty beer is year-round, man. I do think that actually identifying a beginning of summer has gotten more difficult in many ways because much the way that, for example, the Christmas season begins sometime around Halloween, the efforts to get a jump start and sort of be the first thing out of the gate as a summer enterprise has gotten pushed back earlier and earlier and earlier to the point where this year, the summer movie season began...
Yeah, started in, like, late March.
Began with, what, would you say Fast Five? Which would be, what,
Oh, maybe
April?
Earlier than that.
Uh-huh. I don't remember.
I feel like Fast Five was the first, like, blockbuster, explodey...
I think that's a reasonable
summer movie, and it came out in, I think April 30th. So it's sort of tricky, but as far as personal choices, first of all, talking about food, funnel cake. The first time I have wadded a dripping funnel cake into my gaping, greasy maw is sort of the first, my symbol of...
See, for me, that's State Fair, which is in Minnesota, is end of the summer.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
You do not spend enough time going to outdoor carnivals. I would
that is
speculate.
Probably true. I'm staying in bed. That's the reason. Well, no, because to me, at the Minnesota State Fair, it's always something fried on a stick. Every year, there has to be a new sort of gimmick, something
butter
fried
on a stick. Fried butter on a stick.
I mean, it used to be things that were a little bit more reasonable, like... and I do mean a little bit, like deep fried candy bars on a stick. No. One year it was deep fried like Snickers bars on a stick.
That sounds so
I
good.
Did have the deep fried alligator on a
Yum.
Stick one time when we were there. Tastes like a cross between fish and chicken, which is exactly what you would expect it would be like. Exactly. It's in the water, it's on
land. They're chickens.
Tastes like fish, tastes on like chicken.
They're chickens of the deep.
Yeah, but to me, if you're going to do state fair food, fair food, you got to go mini donuts.
Oh,
mini donuts. The funnel cake is fine. At the Minnesota State Fair, you watch the mini donut get the batter come out of the little thing. Mm-hmm. It floats down the boiling oil river. Mm-hmm. It flips itself over at some point. It's all automated, so you watch your mini donuts. They go around the little track, and then eventually they just get flipped out directly into the bag. And
that little paper cone.
And then they get sprinkled with water.
And then that bag just turns clear.
Yeah. Absolutely. If you're going to go state fair food, it's got to be the ridiculously greasy mini donuts, which...
Anytime you can wring out the container over your mouth when you're done.
The best thing about the mini donuts to me, the most fascinating thing about them is that they have something in common with French fries from Five Guys, which is if you eat them within 5 minutes... They are, like, the best, most delicious, most sinfully great thing ever. If you eat them more than 10 minutes after they came out of the thing, they're like, eh. So the whole point is the speed with which you have to share your mini donuts with others. Because you cannot have all the mini donuts.
Right, it is a race between blissful goodness and scalding your face off.
The fact that you think that involves sharing and not the application of a funnel and plunger...
It's absolutely true.
My sister said that too. She went right to sharing. That was odd.
That was strange.
I'm with you on fair food, but I would modify to mini donuts as opposed to funnel cake.
I'd also like to say one more thing about summertime and milestones and whatnot, that I want to stop and mourn a lost milestone. Once I thought it was something to celebrate, but the fact that ABC has made Wipeout year-round has ruined...
Your circadian rhythms are like...
Well, first of all, yes, it has thrown off my circadian rhythms. Second of all, there is not the, Wipeout is back, Wipeout is back, Wipeout is back, because there's winter Wipeout and spring Wipeout, and now that Wipeout is available all the time, it's as if they suddenly put eggnog on the shelves 12 months out of the year.
Steven, you have just made my ice cream sandwich point for me. Thank you. Boom.
You are ruining ice cream sandwiches for yourself by having them all year round, is what Glenn is telling you.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
You would enjoy them more if you held them back for yourself.
Yes, but in January, I'm going to call you up and be all like, oh, it's so good.
But this is the theory under which... This is under the theory under which I do not have peppermint mochas outside the month of December. Because if I did, then...
But you control that yourself.
Yeah.
That is a bit of self-control that you are exercising.
Stephen's like, I don't understand.
I do not understand that. I have thought about freezing eggnog so that I have it year round.
Well, I think that's reasonable, though. I mean, not your Wipeout thing, but the concept in general.
Yeah. I feel like the bloom is off the Wipeout rose. And the first ever thing making me happy this podcast
was Wipeout.
It was. It's the
but
end
now
of an
that
era.
It's on all the time, it does not have quite the buzz because it was emblematic of sort of trashy, fun summer TV programming. Like, I'm going to watch people splat in the mud. Keep your reading and your, you know, whatever it is you do. And
you need that bumper sticker. Keep your reading.
Egghead.
So anyway, the curse of winter Wipeout.
Outstanding.
It is the eggnog of TV programming.
Well done. Well, When I thought about what constitutes the beginning of summer, I was completely distracted by all the clips from really unpromising-looking network shows that I've been watching all week, because it's Upfronts week as we tape this. That's when the networks bring their shows for the fall, and sometimes mid-season, to show to advertisers at a big presentation, and journalists go to, and basically all you see is a clip reel. And the clip reels, often are not very exciting and not very promising because it's very early still and you're not getting very much of the flavor of a show. So anything with any complexity, sometimes with a comedy, you can see that there are some good jokes.
Well, and sometimes you're getting pilots that will be reshot.
Absolutely true. So to me, certainly from a cultural perspective and from a job perspective, once you get to the upfronts, you're basically moving into the next cycle. So to me, this week is the beginning of the new TV season and therefore the beginning of summer. The rest of summer will involve receiving pilots in the mail, trying to get around to watching them all, falling in love with one, watching it get canceled, and then waiting around for them to cancel William Shatner, which they finally did, I would just like to point out. As my friend...
And outsourced.
Yes, and outsourced. Both canceled. As my friend Dan Feinberg calls it, Feces, my dad says, has been canceled by CBS. So that is one we talked about in the fall that I did not like. It lasted a lot longer than any of the ones I did like. So for me, summer partly involves moving into that next cycle.
Nice.
So it's the beginning of summer in that regard. Otherwise, I would have to say summer marks the time when I enjoy driving.
Yes.
Because I am not a driver most of the time. I get around without a car, but I do have a car share account. And so I do get a car a couple few times a month and drive around and do shopping. I don't enjoy driving except in the summer. The first time that I roll down the window and have the music on and I enjoy the act of driving enough that I would actually just drive around, it has to be summer, because that's really the only time that that happens.
That is a great, great point.
I'm going to be the contrarian here. Not only do I hate blasting music while I'm in a car, because it makes me very self-conscious, and I don't want other people to know what I'm listening to. I hate the phenomenon of people blasting music, because I live on a very busy street in Washington, D.C.
No, but I'm not talking about urban driving, are you?
No, I'm not talking about driving in cities.
Talking about the open road.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, open road,
I'm still saying...
And yet, really, you got to get over being self-conscious about Donna Summer.
No. It's never Donna Summer. Trust
Glenn
me.
Glenn wants the kids to get off his lawn, I think is what
Well, no. These people would ride by. The only reason I know every word to Hey Soul Sister by is because of this phenomenon of thinking that everybody wants to hear what you're listening to.
I absolutely agree with you, and I am not talking about the volume level. For me, does not need to be loud.
Good.
So I'm a very respectful, window music listener.
I totally hear what you're saying, and I wish that you would come and explain this to the man who has recently taken to walking up and down my block in a headband, midi shirt, and short shorts, carrying a gigantic boombox on his shoulder as though it were 1978.
I was gonna say,
what does he play on it?
Classic soul, actually, so I can't really complain too much.
Yeah. But
still,
it seriously
goes on.
Have you ever seen the Aziz Ansari? I can't even say the name, but it is his. He and his friend concocted a plan to come up with the worst mixtape they could come by, and so it's like, I Don't Want to Wait by Paula Cole. And whoever came up with the losing, one of them was Butterfly by Crazy Town, and so whichever one lost whatever competition was, and it was Aziz Ansari, is walking around holding a boom box, like walking through like a crowded park, blasting.
We'll have to find
the worst possible thing he can find.
We'll have to dig that up, because I know you showed that to me at some
point.
It is
so funny.
Well, it's good that we would be on this topic, because we were going to also do a quick survey of favorite summer music. So, Glenn, when it is summer and you have your windows tightly rolled up so as not to bother anyone.
When you roll your windows up, the music gets louder.
That's true.
In
so
the
you're
car.
Just you're just
I tend
blasting
to I your tend to do
head.
That. I tend to roll the windows up to make it louder.
So Glenn, summer music for you means what?
This is the music that I associate with summer. Have I mentioned I hate summer? That is Bach's Toccata and Fugue in D minor, which I do associate with summer, actually, because it was the soundtrack to a commercial that played through my childhood about Brigantine Castle and Amusement Pier, which was this haunted castle on the Jersey Shore.
Yes,
so everybody in the tri-state area knew, and I was terrified of this particular commercial. So there's that. I also associate this with summer.
We're off to outer space. We're leaving Mother Earth to save the human race. Our star blazer.
This is what you blast in your car, is it?
Okay.
Nice.
That is the theme song to Star Blazers, an anime that was on when I was a kid. This is represents summer to me because this is the thing I fought my mom about. She wanted me to go outside and play, and I wanted to stay inside and listen and watch Star Blazers. This was a 25 episodes long series about... never mind what it's about. It was awesome. And, you know, I was at swim team practice, so I would always have to come home and make sure that I was home by 3:30 so I could watch this cartoon. But there was a time when there was a pool party, and I had to leave, so I missed the conclusion, and I still to this day do not know what happened when Derek Wildstar of the Star Force confronted Prince Zordar of the Comet Empire. And not that I'm bitter, but I still think about it.
This is just like what happened to Steven when they canceled Playing It Straight.
It's true.
Last one. Okay, so Summer, suppose we're in the car, and I'm being very self-conscious about the music. I'm with my partner, who is from Miami, and his kind of music involves either Gloria Estefan or some form of sound machine, preferably both, together. My kind of music is Broken Bells and Magnetic Fields, but we do compromise on this one thing.
Todo aquel que piensa que la vida es desigual tiene que saber que no es así, que la vida es una hermosura, hay que vivirla. Todo aquel que piensa que está solo y que está mal tiene que saber que no es así, que en la vida no hay nadie solo, siempre hay alguien.
That is Celia Cruz, the great Celia Cruz, that even I, even I, who have no discernible rhythm, can feel the beat in that piece of music.
Yes, we were all dancing.
And, oh, my God, the chair dancing that just happened.
And it's just so joyous. Again, I don't believe in summer, but I believe in her.
Well, that's wonderful, Glenn. Trey Graham, what's your music of summer?
I think it is very funny that Glenn Weldon led off with classical music, however ironically he did it, because one of the things that I will absolutely cop to not just playing music loud with the windows down, but playing music loud with the top down, because I have a little convertible with
you
a roll bar and little racing tires, and I will totally put the top down, and I try not to do it in the city, but I will absolutely go tearing down the highway with music playing really, really loud. And I have a set of summer driving playlists, and this is one of the ones, and you will understand why in just a second. I'm telling you, there is no way you're not driving 90 miles an hour right now. What you don't want to do is play that on your way to the beach through those tiny little towns in Delaware on your way to the shore, to Rehoboth, because you will absolutely get busted twice.
Not that that's
ever happened to me. There's an overture from The Marriage of Figaro, Mozart, of course. It's on my mind a little bit because I just saw Amadeus last night, and I used it as a sound cue in the show. But it is totally a piece of music that and Rossini overtures and a couple of other, you know, sort of classical bits that, you know, begin small and get to that gigantic horse race climax with, you know, everything just sort of wailing away. I don't want to be pigeonholed as the classical guy, though. I would also like to point out that there's a playlist of mine that is called Human Summer. It's a playlist that involves The Killers, Human, which is a little dancey and makes me very happy, and I Predict a Riot and a couple of other things of that nature. I've got an Afropop playlist anchored by Angélique Kidjo's Afirika, which is from the album Black Ivory Soul. I made this playlist one year when I was driving across Zimbabwe to go on safari. This playlist also features, oddly enough, Brenda Fassi, who I've talked about before in the context of that movie White Wedding. It also includes, oddly enough, The Lighthouse Family and Madonna, this playlist.
No.
I'm not entirely sure. Oh, shut up. I have a whole other playlist that that exists because I am hopelessly gay and a child of the mid '80s. So it's I Want to Dance with Somebody and Who's Zoomin' Who and Freeway of Love and
if you
stuff
listen
like
to
that.
Who's Zoomin' if you listen to Who's Zoomin' Who now, I know that production on that.
I know it's terrible,
worst.
Isn't it? I know it's awful.
It's like all these electric keyboards.
I have a sort of rowdy country women playlist. It includes things like Heads Carolina, Tails California by Jody Messina, which is a pretty fast two-step song if you happen to be out dancing with the Cowboys, as I have been known to do in the summer. And then this song, which I kind of want you to listen to rather than having me tell you what it is. I want you to listen to a little snippet and tell me what you're hearing in this.
Just like in the story.
What do you notice about the meter in this?
Oh, it's in 5.
It's in 5/4, yeah. So it's a country song. It's Susie Boggess. It's Music on the Wind, which is from her album Aces, which is her, you know, her biggest charting thing from like 1991. Between the instrumentation and that rhythm, it's got a little Latin sound to it.
Absolutely.
Which and that intersection of country and Latin sort of turns me on. I like the song a lot.
Outstanding.
Let the listener know that during the Mozart, there was no chair dancing, but Trey was chair conducting.
Oh, shut up.
That is true. Stephen Thompson.
So Glenn mentioning Brigantine Castle and Amusement Park has conjured up, of course, what it means to be summertime, which is if you live in Madison, Wisconsin, ads for the Little America Amusement Park, mm-hmm. which are so great that I once taped a bunch of television, scanned through it so I could burn this commercial to DVD, in which a guy like leads you through this incredibly sort of delightfully chintzy amusement park, and one of the attractions is that you can have a nice cold Coke. Plenty of action in the bumper boats. Anyway, oh my God, if you dare ride the Mad Mouse, Little America. Music, like Trey drives a zippy little convertible, I drive a 2005 Chrysler Town and Country. And nothing says badass mofo quite like a gold minivan. In my summer music, in my top down, I recommend anything that feels big. Mm. So whether it's sort of more obvious choices like Andrew WK's album I Get Wet, which is completely from second to second engineered to be as overdriven as possible, where each second has momentum that gets louder and louder and louder. Andrew WK's I Get Wet is a classic. It is a great album. Oh, just get it. The first three albums by Fountains of Wayne. I've talked about Fang Island on this show. That's a great summer record. New Pornographers, the song The Bleeding Heart Show. If you don't already know it, it is one of the greatest songs.
My ringtone.
It is Linda's ringtone. I love it so much. I also recommend, if you're looking for something a little more thoughtful as you're driving, perhaps the sun is setting, Juliana Barwick. Is an artist we've featured on NPR Music this year. We've got a little video of her. She plays this sort of looped choral music. I think, Trey, you might like it. She has an album that came out this year called The Magic Place. That is a very good sort of reflective recording for when you're driving sort of in warm weather, top down, sun is setting. If you want to sort of feel at peace with the world, I highly recommend it.
Very, very good. I will tell you right now, I basically punted on this in the following sense. As soon as I started to list anything, I knew that I had stolen all of it from Stephen, because Stephen is a big fan of summer top-down music, and basically what I do in the summer, if I am not telling a lie, is I listen to Stephen's best ofs.
Yay!
That is basically my summer music if I am not lying, which I will not lie because, well, why would I? So I have to admit that it would be Fountains of Wayne and New Pornographers and a bunch of stuff that I knew Stephen was going to say, so I completely punted and didn't even put anything.
Sort of like I did with reading.
Absolutely, as you are to reading. So you can find us on the blog at Monkey See or on our Facebook page, as Stephen said, facebook.com/PCHH, and tell us about the stuff that you like in the summer. And that brings us around to our final segment, What's Making Us Happy This Week. Glenn Weldon, what's making you happy this week?
You know, a lot of people out there think they know me, think that... as my nerdiosity is a matter of public record, they think I know what he's going to pick this week. Neil Gaiman did an episode of Doctor Who. Neil Gaiman wrote an episode of Doctor Who. He's going to pick that. Smallville had its finale after 10 years. He's going to pick that. Well, you know what? I'm not your nerd monkey. I am my own man. I have a mind. Yes, the Neil Gaiman episode of Doctor Who was pretty awesome. He did everything he needed to do. He picked up the pieces, played with them, and then put them back, adding a layer to the story, but without distorting it, which is the sweet spot. It's exactly what you want to do with a serial drama like that. Smallville had a finale that encapsulated everything that was wrong for that show for the last 10 years. They did invite Michael Rosenbaum back as Lex Luthor to do what he does, which is to take that cheesy dialogue and put a layer of breathy evil full of import over it. Mm-hmm. So he can get away with lines like, "That's the thing about memories, Clark. You can't forget them." He's not wrong. But the thing that's making me happy is, in fact, this.
I think what makes Franklin Bash, Franklin Bash, is the chemistry between the two guys.
Peter's brilliant with a jury. He's got the suave, good-looking matinee idol thing.
Objection! Counsel is making out with his client on the stand. Mr. Bash, stop kissing your client.
And Franklin tends to be a little more unorthodox. He just goes in head first. We'll deal with the consequences later.
You cross the line.
Well, Franklin and Bash, we cross the line 10 exits back.
That is a trailer for an upcoming TNT show called Franklin and Bash, starring Breckenmeyer, who normally has a sense of humor about himself. He's one of the people behind Robot Chicken. I put that in the win column for him.
Uh-huh.
And Mark Paul Gosselaar, parentheses Zach Morris, close parentheses, playing two wildly unconventional lawyers.
Mm-hmm. Judges love that.
Judges. And in fact, I'm going to adopt that construction you heard him just say. I think the thing that makes Glenn Weldon is, because anything I say after that is just gravy.
Right.
It's just perfect. If I was creating a trailer, a parody trailer to satirize insufferable, repellent lawyer shows, it's this trailer. I'm reacting to the trailer. I haven't seen the show. It could be a Peabody Award-winning thing. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. Who's to say? We haven't seen it yet. Probably not. But this is just an amazing piece of, I'm calling it comedy, because it is so what it is. If they rename this show Douchebag and Douchebag, Attorneys at Law, I'm watching it. But that's what it seems to be. It's a
very
lot of fun.
Good. I know you had great fun with it.
You have to see this trailer.
Thank you, Glenn Weldon. Trey Graham, making you happy this week?
Well, among the things that is making me happy this week, and I think I can say this now because he's not now someone that NPR will be covering, Donald Trump is not running for president. Aww. That's making me happy this week. Also, what's making me happy this week is that I've met a charming young fellow. His name is Hunter, and the other night he went to sleep on my face.
Good Lord, God.
I've adopted a cat.
Uh-huh. Oh.
And I'm very, very happy about it.
Oh, nice. That's excellent.
That's all I got.
Perfectly adequate making you happy this week. New kitty.
Yep. Oh,
very, very
new kitty.
And I'm not making that up. He did actually try to go to sleep on my face the other night.
Very good, Trey Graham. Stephen Thompson, what's making you happy this week?
I, too, have a new cat. Her name is Milani.
You
and
do?
She's terrible.
That's awesome.
Yeah, she's kind of the cutest thing in the world. All right, quick things. One, correction. In a recent episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour, I made a grievous error when talking about the movie Whippet, which I said that Ellen Page was too small to be successful in roller derby. This was moronic. Right. I was wrong.
You know this because you were savagely beaten.
I was
by 14 jammers. But it was Ellen Page's size.
They were right. I was wrong. The jammer that I knew in the Mad Rollin' Dolls in Madison, Wisconsin, who is my one roller derby friend, was not
was apparently a hulking beast.
No, she's not.
No, she's not at all.
She's not a teeny either. No,
she's a corn-fed Midwesterner like us all.
Hi.
So anyway,
we miss you.
Anyway, Anyway, Ellen Page, not too small. Go see Whippet. Rent it. Buy it. Whatever. Yeah. Whippet's great.
Awesome.
Ellen
movie.
Page, perfectly cast. Stephen Thompson, dumb and wrong. another thing making me happy. We have posted Linda's Bachelor Pad recap on our Facebook page. You can go to facebook.com/PCHH and read it yourselves. Also, over the weekend, my kids discovered Mythbusters.
Yes, they did.
And Mythbusters is awesome. Because in the process, I too discovered Mythbusters. It is so
really?
Great.
Wow.
Yeah, I hadn't really seen it.
I hear it. There's
despite my evangelizing about
despite
it.
Despite her there's endless also, droning on about
there is also
it
a really cool new thing called Fire.
I can't wait till you find out about it.
Anyway, if somehow you haven't seen Mythbusters, Mike, oh, my kids just loved it. Grace will teach Jonah to build the laser that he inadvertently uses to blow up the world.
Yeah.
As much as Jonah loved it, Grace really loved it, my little 7-year-old daughter. For those of you with children, particularly artistically inclined children, my son discovered an artist named Ed Emberley, who does books on how to draw. If you have a kid who is interested in drawing, look up the books of Ed Emberley. The book that my son fell in love with over the weekend is Ed Emberley's Big Orange Drawing Book. That is making me happy. Also, Bon Iver is playing Washington, D.C. on my birthday.
Okay. So,
what? Just because I listed a lot of things
doesn't
mean
you may be a little too
happy.
The man had gum surgery, obviously, where this is the painkiller.
Yes, clearly.
You may be a little too happy. Okay. Making me happy this week, one is obviously that Bridesmaids did excellent at the box office. Mm-hmm. That makes me happy for a variety of reasons. I liked the movie, and I think it will lead to good things. The other thing I want to mention is that I got a copy of Blowout from the Criterion Collection, which just came out. Blowout is a 1980, possibly 81, paranoid thriller with John Travolta as a sound man who accidentally records a car accident. And then it becomes this very complicated, he's trying to untangle this mystery of what really happened in this car accident involving the politician. The great thing about the Criterion Collection, this is a Brian De Palma film, and the great thing about the Criterion Collection is it's not just a lot of extras like you get in a lot of movies, like you don't get a traditional just commentary and deleted scenes. You get, in this case, an hour-long interview between Noah Baumbach and De Palma, where he just asks him all these questions about directing the movie, and it just goes on and on and on. It's a really lengthy, detailed thing. The movie is terrific. It's really exciting and cool. John Travolta is very good in it, and it will really make you look at John Travolta a little bit differently and understand why people really at one point were using words like Marlon and Brando when they talked about John Travolta. It's a terrific movie, and the extras, as is very common with Criterion releases, excellent, top of the line, really interesting. So that's making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of Pop Culture Happy Hour. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Glenn at G-H Weldon, W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham, Trey with an E, Graham like the cracker. You can follow Steven at I Dislike Steven, S-T-E-P-H-E-N. You can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, that's K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you are chair dancing to right now. And that's it for Pop Culture Happy Hour. Thanks to all of you for being here, you guys.
More fun than gum surgery.
And thanks to all of you for listening. And we will actually not be with you next week. We've got a few things we've got to take care of, so we will be taking a day off. You'll have to listen to the archives.
Wait, is that because you're going to pick up a Fancy Pants Award or because Mike Katziff is going to some fun music festival?
Oh, be quiet. It's actually because of both of those things. And I'm sure we'll report about all that when we get back. But we will see all of you back here in 2 weeks.